You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living. Today we're talking to Chloe B., an herbalist, educator, dancer, and entrepreneur. Her passion is to educate and encourage people to embrace clinical herbalism and plant therapeutics in order to build a healthy mind, body, and spirit. She is the creator of Rainbow Bliss Botanicals, a line of handcrafted, high-quality organic plant medicines, tinctures, teas, salves, aromatherapy mists, and body care. In this interview, we discuss the importance of observation in building a greater awareness of nature, the marriage of pharmacy and food, plant medicines that work with those experiencing addiction, stress, and other ailments, do-it-yourself herbal medicine, and a few specific herbs such as kratom and ashwagandha. Welcome, Chloe.
Tell us about your journey of rewilding and becoming a healer.
Ooh, well, going off that Sonoran Desert vibration I was mentioning, being born and raised in the desert definitely teaches you adaptability and to find areas where you can flourish in order to survive. And I feel like in terms of community and society, this nook of specialty with herbal medicine and remembering traditions and the root really came through for me in about 2018. I was on a scholarship to Arizona State University and I was a dance and choreography major, and I got really sick. My immune system got totally, I don't know if it was just jumping from high school into taking 21 credit hours, working three jobs to, you know, pay for books and rent and all that stuff. But my immune system kind of went berserk, and I got pretty ill in early 2019. And with that lower immunity came a lot of research, because I had to be kind of in the more like yin, repairing, restoring phase and go more internal. Had to withdraw for some classes, and I started studying factory farming and the manufacturing and genetic modification of foods that are available on campuses, which led me to research what I grew up eating and what was available in cafeterias, what's being fed in hospitals, and all in all began to see this marriage between pharmacy and food on a main huge scale. So I slowly healed myself. It's always a work in progress when you're really sensitive. I'm kind of sensitive, and environmental toxins are very rich in our environment. So I'm not going to say I'm healed, I healed myself. But through the process of discovering what is healthy food, what is real food, what is slow food, I changed my major from dance, choreography, and performance to soil system sciences and ecology, which was under the School of Sustainability at ASU. And through that lens and through that discipline schedule, I thus went on to focus in on food deserts in Phoenix, and which led me to understanding where the reservations are, where the lower income areas are, what is socioeconomic polarization, just opening my eyes to all of these inequalities and imbalances in our society on a local and a global scale. You know, South Phoenix, all the world. You know, there's a lot of parallels between our community in Arizona and the way America operates and the way society is in general these days. So all in all, after graduation, I did a thesis on food deserts and moved to Ecuador to study mycology and permaculture, and lived on a farm in the mountains of Ecuador for about 4 months, and did some controlled projects on myceliating compost and different variables of how to grow good oyster mushrooms, which was so fun watching those little babes sprout right out of the ground. And you know, we kept goats and would make goat cheese, and it was not glamorous. There was only six of us living on this really rugged hillside, and we would go down into town one day a week on horses to get grain and things that we couldn't grow, and just really introduced me via hands-on to what is slow food and growing your own medicine. And I decided after that to not really get a 9-to-5 in the jobs that were available to me as a fresh graduate, which was mostly, to be honest, it was like solar material technologies and design, waste management, things that I wasn't really resonating with at the time, because lab work and ecology or plant biology jobs really require a pretty specialized PhD to really get into the lab, into the nitty-gritty, and get a profession in that field. So I decided, blah, 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 long story short, I decided to go ahead and be an herbalist, reconnecting anthropology and botany, and went into a full-time school of traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, and Western eclectic herbology. And in somewhere in that whole process, actually pretty early on in that process, I walked into Happy, Healthy, High, Horny Herbs, demanded of a job, was refused a job, went back again and again until they hired me. Within 6 months of working there, I was a manager. And then a year and a half later, they put it up for sale because they were moving. And I bought that and transformed it into completely organic and local as possible medicine for the people. So through that process, it's been a lot of growing pains, a lot of responsibility, holding myself accountable for what our community knows about herbal medicine. There are herbalists in the Sonoran Desert. There's some fantastic herbalists and elders in this desert community. But in terms of accessible class information and donation-based education, not a whole lot going on. So I started a lot of class series back in 2012 based out of my apothecary and at festivals that were all donation-based. And from there, I continued to teach and learn and also dance. And I travel quite a bit as well for the sake of either botany or ethnobotany or dance. And now I'm here with a successful product line called Rainbow Bliss Botanicals, which is all handcrafted, either wild harvested or organically cultivated. And salves, tinctures, cough syrups, herbal tea blends, misters, oxymels, fun stuff like that. I love crafting. Most of my time is in the lab in the kitchen these days, or out harvesting.
How would you describe the advantage to people on the many levels that it exists in at least finding some location where you live that is wild, and then seeing what you can gather there, learning that, and then also seeing how it changes throughout the year? It seems to me like we really have this real physical disconnect from nature. It's there and we're here. It seems like people could cultivate a relationship where they are the land, they are nature.
It's rich because I'm a creature of an urban environment. You know, I love urban environments. I love museums and dance and contemporary art and walking through the, you know, streets where there's restaurants representing food from all corners of the world. You know, I love urban environments and I have lived in many urban environments. However, collectively, I think that the immense amount of manufactured environments and concrete, of course, disconnect us from our root, from the soil, from where food comes from. And when out harvesting or when beginning to harvest, I feel, one, blessed because I've been in a space, I've been on a certain landscape for a long time. I grew up between right over by like Saguaro Lake, Fort McDowell area in Fountain Hills. And then I also grew up in Ventura, California, because my parents would take us out camping in this old 1960s trailer we inherited from my great grandpa. Really hot in the summer. So kind of grew up getting to know the coast and getting into my oceanic mermaidy self, but also really deeply knowing the relationships in the desert through observation. And I think observation is the first step into becoming an herbalist, a wildcrafter, a bird watcher, any kind of land connection activity, observation is the first. So what kind of subtle cues is the environment giving you? Is there a hum that you're hearing from a certain insect? Is there a certain color scheme? Is it a bit more gray? Is it popping and vibrant? Are things blossoming? What kind of animals are around? What kind of sounds do you hear? I think observation is critical and beautiful to kind of tap into your yin receptive side of yourself before ever taking anything from a land. And I tell students and friends that when we go to a place to harvest or learn, just observe before reading in an encyclopedia, oh, Ocotillo is for lymphatic drainage and a sluggish liver. You know, yeah, that's great. Definitely books are amazing. But first, sit with that Ocotillo. What does it feel like? What is it? Is it, you know, emanating a certain vibration? Does it look like something familiar to you? Does it seem feminine? Does it seem masculine? Are there animals that are nibbling on it? You know, things like that. And then form your own kind of theory, and then back that up with books and research. And I love doing that with desert plants. And I just think that's a really rich practice to get into. Just sit with the plant, check it out, go back, visit it during different times of the year, and have certain spots that you harvest and foster life for as well. Not just, ravage, leave the soil disturbed and disturb the biocryptic information around the plants. You know, it's important for us to be gentle when harvesting plants, because in the Sonoran Desert, there are really complex relationships happening that aren't really visible to the naked eye. So harvesting is so much fun, though, when you like get to tune in and it becomes this amazing play and this conversation. And I think one of my favorite things to work with is creosote, because it's so abundant, and creosote baths and creosote salves are such a great way to topically treat eczema and psoriasis, and also just to tap into the wild spirit of the Sonoran Desert as well. And it's everywhere. It's what you smell when it rains. It's like almost monsoon season there. So hopefully you guys will all be sniffing that here pretty soon.
Oh, it rained. Yeah, it monsooned, well, slightly last weekend, I believe.
Yay!
Yeah, it was, the dew point was low, and it just kind of, it was a rainy day. And I wouldn't quite call it monsoon rain, because that, as we know, is one whole thing in itself. But it did rain. Some of the little washes got filled with water, and so we almost got the real deal. But it was wonderful. And yeah, creosote, it's definitely magic. I'd say that in the Sonoran Desert, the smell of creosote, well, now that it's turning green because it got rained on, and it smells so amazing, and just the smell of it after it rains, I would say that if there is a plant that represents the Sonoran Desert, it is creosote. So yeah. Magical.
And I don't know if you're familiar with flower essences, but flower essences are really subtle energetic medicine, and a lot of great flowers happen in the desert. When we have super blooms, it's just incredible. And I know that there are some kind of famous, you know, baklava remedies and things like that that people take for stress and anxiety. But when I started sitting with flowers and really checking them out, listening to them, doing some free writing while sitting next to them, I started to have more and more aha moments, whether it was just gentle, like love yourself, or whether it was like deep, you know, diving into like, why is manic depression and bipolarity and anxiety and heart disease so common in our society? And like, why have we shifted away from flowers? Why have we shifted away from primal ways of living? And I've had everything from just like minor things to like deep soulful analysis of the side effects of urban rat race and the fusion of capitalistic pharmacy and food source and all sorts of stuff. Like, flowers are deep, and we have lots of them to play with in the desert. So yeah.
Sitting with flowers and sitting with plants and talking to them and free writing. And the idea you're talking about, maybe asking for permission and observing nature before you actually pick anything. Have you ever, is that something you actually work with people doing? Let's go out and all sit with a plant and hang out. And what does it have to tell you?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, I love working not working. Working's a strong word. I love offering, I guess, like a template, energetic template for how you can connect with plants. But I really encourage people to make their own story up with this plant. You know, it's, I think our culture is very much into obedience and like filling a void or seeking altered states of consciousness, which is totally natural. Humans have always been seeking altered states of consciousness in every culture throughout time. However, the subtle medicine that plants offer is also just as transformational. And so just, you know, if I have a person ask me like, oh, is this plant like, is it going to get you like high? Is it going to like relax you and make you fall asleep? Is it poisonous? People tend to ask really extreme questions when they're just getting to know some plant spirits. And I really recommend people to just like peel away any expectations and dive into the aesthetics of the flower. Not everybody's a plant whisperer, but you can definitely look deeply into a saguaro blossom flower or a prickly pear blossom flower and have a pretty beautiful heart-opening experience. And also just kind of get more in tune with yourself too. You know, treat these plants like your mirrors and see how you relate with each and every one of them. I know it's interesting and different for people who come from different environments. You know, if you're from the Midwest and you come into the Sonoran Desert, you may not know what you're looking at. Just as if I was in the Pacific Northwest and I went up there, and other than reishi and Solomon seal and some Oregon grape root, you know, that's not really my biome. So I would thus go through the process of just introducing myself. What looks poisonous? What looks medicinal? You know, just getting familiar with a place and then researching and diving in from there. And ask elders too. Elders know a lot. I mean, elders from certain areas, they probably have lots of stories about plants you know, elders who caretake for the land aren't easy to come by. But if you ever do meet an elder who works with plants, I'm sure they'd love to be asked questions, and they might tell you that, you know, I belong to the land. You know, me and these plants, we live together, we evolve together. And that's really a good sign of an herbalist, is when they, you know, they can openly say, you know, I don't own this area. I don't own this plant. I don't have the rights to this harvest. This is my harvest. This is my spot. This is my tradition. All of that, I hear that. When I hear people say that, I understand where that's coming from. But I also think that the plants and us are co-evolving together, and we belong to the land. And, you know, essentially Mama Earth's the ruler there. So I think as subtle and receptive as we can be, the better. And I do know for people that do struggle with a lot of anxiety and depression, hopelessness, feelings of melancholy, do get a lot of relief from connecting with plants that surround them and learning that there is indeed abundance around you, edible and medicinal abundance surrounding you, life. You know, generally getting to know that there is life surrounding you is a very uplifting thing.
We tend to think of, well, not you and I, but as people tend to think, or many people tend to think of nature as, this is a weird way of putting it, but I've oftentimes really not been able to understand how some people can litter in nature. So if you spend time wildcrafting or hiking or in nature at all, you're going to see outright garbage out there that people obviously left. And it always shocked me, and I've always really tried to understand why. You know, how is that possible that someone could do that? And I really look at it like it's because they don't have a connection to themselves. And if you don't have a connection to yourself, you don't have a connection to nature. So when you look at a map and you see this like empty space between two points on a map, there's just nothing there. And when you go into nature, there's just nothing there. And unfortunately, when they look into themselves, there's just nothing there. Like what you're saying is a great way to begin to cultivate for individuals to, because, you know, really, what is health? Like, what is wholeness? There's a lot to it. And I think definitely, you know, reconnecting to oneself and reconnecting to nature, having that practice, the environment gets healthy as we get healthy, and we get healthy as the environment gets healthy. Like, we are the land, quite literally.
Yeah, I feel that. As long as we're aware of where our medicines are coming from and, you know, slowly peel away the mental conditioning that has possibly occurred depending on your upbringing and, you know, to get to the root of what's going on in your life and who you are as a human being and what is your calling, you know, and it doesn't have to be that everyone's working with plants, but even for people who are networkers or counselors, like may they see the bigger picture there. Are they weavers, you know, weaving together human beings? Are they menders, you know, seeing these, you know, sometimes it's fun to see ourselves as mythological or folkloric beings because we get to kind of play with archetypes that have shaped who we are, or maybe work in a dream space of like, oh, this is my archetype. Like I may be a programmer, but what that is I'm helping people to gain the tools so that they can better their success with being an entrepreneur. Like some people think that their career is like, ugh, like mundane, but in order to stay uplifted and positive, look at the bigger picture and see what you're really doing for people. Are you helping people, or are your actions of what you purchase and what you work for supporting this further, not to be so direct or harsh, but is your lifestyle furthering the pain and destruction that, you know, FDA, Big Pharma, you know, things like that are causing in our world? You know, we want to be a part of the solution and not the problem. And I think just plants can help us reflect into that.
What a great assignment for somebody who is feeling kind of down. Say, hey, go to a nursery, you know, and walk around, find some plants that talk to you. And then bring them home and start living with them, like watch TV with them, hang out with your plants.
I was like, if being an herbalist doesn't work out for me, I'm going to grow sprouts and just be a sprout farmer, because then you just get to deal with baby fresh life every day. And that's pretty happy. Like if you go see like a tray of sprouts at a farmer's market, like what is more joyous than that? A million little sunflower sprouts all just like, you know, greeting the sun for the first time. That's pretty dang cheery right there. I do say so myself.
Oh, it definitely is. And you apply to something that you were saying, we definitely can make our own mythology. And so we can put our life in a bigger picture. So, I mean, really make up your own mythology and go get some houseplants. And that's a good place to start and get outside.
I have a couple, actually more than a couple. I have quite a few, a good, beautiful cornucopia of gorgeous human beings who have been marginalized in society for their current or past substance abuse issues, who I met through the lens of providing them with kratom, which is a plant that I'm really passionate and educated about and happy to share. If people want to contact me for more information on this plant or resources, I'm always available. But we live in a culture that has a stigma and marginalizes addiction, which can be quite a dangerous equation for like accidental overdose, miseducation, hidden addictions, things like that. But what I was getting at is that crafting medicine, a couple of these people who I've been supplying kratom to for a while, they started coming to my medicine craft classes and realized how fun is that to make your own medicated cider, to make your own deodorant, to make your own you know, strep throat tea or essential oil blend, to make your own cough syrup. That is an endless portal of fun and empowering knowledge to know, because to present to a relative who starts to get a scratchy throat or has a cough and be like, hey, I made this thing that I learned, and I made it with like honey and some like yerba santa and just like some herbs that I got from the shop or went out to this mountain and got, it might help you out. And then your relative or friend tries it and they're like, wow, that really helped. That sense of purpose, as small as it may sound, that sense of purpose is super healing for anybody, but especially for people who have had substance abuse or sexual abuse or trauma in their lives or PTSD. That sense of purpose and identity shapes a sense of wholeness. And I'm really passionate about DIY herbal medicine making classes. I think every herbalist should be teaching donation-based medicine making classes if they can afford to do so. I really recommend that for every herbalist out there and for everybody who just knows how to make, you know, superfood balls with moringa and chocolate, you know, whatever. And, you know, teach what you know to those around you so that we can grow as a society into health and into self-reliance and independence.
It does definitely create a tremendous amount of healing and confidence. If a person does any wildcrafting at all, or if they don't, if they get basic ingredients and they begin to make herbal concoctions, elixirs, and it's to me, it gives a real feeling of the ability to survive. I mean, there's a lot of prepper stuff these days, and of course we see it, you know, I mean, prepping is a big deal these days, but I often think to myself, people are missing the point. They get too hung up on the bunkers and the ammo and all that kind of stuff, when the most fundamental prepping activity is wild harvesting, is knowing the land, being able to survive in it and having a relationship to it. To me, that's where the ability to survive anything, that's like where my real confidence comes from, is my relationship to the land around me.
Yeah. And too, I also acknowledge that it does take a process to getting to know land and to also getting the sensitivity that it takes to work with plants. You know, some beautiful humans have been numbed for quite a while, whether it's through opiates or alcohol or neglect or self-neglect, you know. Some of these issues are quite numbing in their nature. And so it does take a process to have somebody open their eyes to the healing capacity of plants. And I think that we can hold each other accountable with recognizing patterns in those around us that may be destructive, you know? And I know for myself too, there is a substance abuse issue in my direct family line and also in friends that I grew up with. And I couldn't, you know, if I told some of those people, let's go out and connect with yarrow, they'll be like, nah, brah, like, no way. Or just don't know what that is, don't know, don't care, I'm gonna play video games. You know, I know that it takes a while to introduce these things and also get excitement around these things, especially if there's some large societal factors weighing them down. But I do feel like that's a role that I'm getting into as well, which requires a little bit more counselor training and interaction on a deeper level than just the linear, this herb is good for that, you know? And so I just rewilding the spirit, rewilding our sense of independence and survival is a gateway for people to stop numbing themselves out of fear or boredom and start living, really living on a day-to-day basis. On a cellular level, reproducing your cells in a positive vibration, as weird as that may sound to some.
Oh, no, it doesn't at all. It doesn't at all. And definitely people are walking around very, very numb. And the more, I love the term rewilding that you're using, because it's becoming more, let's say, popular. People are becoming more aware of that. And as you become more rewilded, as you've rewild, you definitely see the numbness in society. And I find that, so what you're really doing is, you are a modern day shaman. And I think that there's really, I believe there's kind of a resurgence of the modern day, of the shaman. I mean, it's existed as long as, you know, tribal cultures, as far as I know. But we seem to be missing that right now. We have doctors, bless them, wonderful, but they're not a shaman. And it seems like, and we need doctors too. I mean, personally, if I break my leg, I'm going to be very happy going to an emergency room. That's where I'm headed. But other than that, I'd rather go to the wise shaman. So it seems like, do you see a resurgence right now, or an awakening to plant medicine, and to maybe even seeing, as we're talking, plants as persons? And do you think, like, as yourself, that modern day shamans are starting to arrive again in our society, which is numb?
Sure. Yeah, I do feel and hear and experience a resurgence of this neo-tribal desire to be a shaman in shamanism. And that's a big word. That's a really, really big title. And that word is deep, and I more so am interested in being an educator and inspiring this resurgence of education. So what we have been going through is the marriage of FDA, Big Pharma, and food. And I don't know how many people are aware of the opiate epidemic at hand. I'm sure some people have been directly affected to it that are listening, but I have some stats here that I would love to share. And this was from American Herbalist Guild webinar that was free to the public yesterday. I have lots of stats from different research binges I've gone on late at night and stuff like that. But this was fresh because it was just from yesterday. This was provided by Bob Lindy. And so drug overdose is the leading cause of accidental death in the United States, with over 47,000 lethal drug overdoses in 2014. Opiate addiction is driving this epidemic, with over 18,000 overdose deaths related to prescription pain relievers and 11,000 deaths related to heroin in 2014. So I know, because I've worked in the realm of opiate addiction for a while by providing kratom, by providing nervines, that a lot of people who get hooked on pharmaceutical drugs are miseducated and actually straight up lied to about its addictive capacity. So when they run out of their prescription, or when their insurance changes, or when they're tossed around from doctor to doctor, they might not get that addicting substance that they are now hooked on repeatedly prescribed to them. What is next? Heroin. So I've watched many close friends and family members go from breaking a wrist or having a shoulder operation, being prescribed Percocet, to then going to Oxycontin, to running out of their Oxycontin and going to heroin. This prescription of opiates spreads like virus in communities and in urban environments and into rural environments too. Suburbia, like, I've looked at some Midwestern populations and maps of opiate addiction in the Midwest. There have been some suburban areas and that have just been like torn apart by opiate addiction, all because of one or two doctors getting direct kickbacks from a pharmaceutical like industry or singular company. That is not practicing medicine. That is not education. That is not wellness oriented. And rather than saying that she's a shaman, I'm a shaman, neo-tribal shamanism, we need to go back to the root of education. Why is there this happening on such a big scale? It's hopefully slowing down now because people are waking up to it, because their families have been ravaged by this situation. There's 21.5 million Americans of age 12 or older that had a substance abuse disorder in 2014. That's huge. That's massive. And that's also four times the rate of 1999. So that can really, over 65%, be related to the prescription of opiate painkillers. And I just think that I could go on and on and on about this for a long time, but I really do think that education is where I stand with how I practice medicine work. And also, the FDA doesn't have naturopathic practitioners and herbalists' best interest in mind. So when I talk about kratom, I'm instantly making myself vulnerable to making claims, to making arrests. So for the record, I am not making any claims or suggesting that anybody take this. Kratom is for research purposes only, but it is an incredible plant that has a long tradition of use that I encourage the education of. And in its nature, it is a tree. It is a leaf of a tree. And just like a leaf on a tree, it does not treat the root of substance abuse problem, but it certainly helps in the process of sobriety and pain management. And if people can wake up to their drugged reality, if people can wake up to how much we're being lied to in the medical field, lied to by practitioners that we should trust, then I think we can together save this plant from being banned, but also educate others about alternatives to drugs with intense side effects that are devastating. So is it okay if I do a little education about about Kratom. I don't know if, do you know much about it?
Do that for sure. And I'll just throw in real quickly that, yeah, I definitely myself have known people who, you know, died and or it destroyed their life. They were fine and either they died later from that and other complications or they were never the same. It destroyed them as an individual. So those two drugs actually that you mentioned, they are always been very terrifying to me. I had an operation a year ago. The recovery was painful as crap. It was horrible. And honestly, I got by on, I know it's not plant-based, but ibuprofen and honestly, red vein kratom. Like that's just my experience. And eventually I just did the kratom and that's what got, so I'm not recommending it to anybody, of course, but that's what got me by. And I can tell you, I was in horrific pain and I was able to bear it. I never touched those extreme drugs. So yeah, keep going.
Sure. Yeah. So that's, yeah, that's awesome that you've tried it and it's not for everybody. There are negative side effects, but, just to go back to like how opiate withdrawal kind of shows up. I talk about this not because I'm assuming that everybody's on drugs. I'm just hopefully offering something, a take home that somebody can realize is beneficial for somebody that they love or know. And also just demystify and this, you know, demystify and just filter out the stigma about our bodies being operating organisms that are complex. You know, if I have somebody walking into my apothecary that's on day one of withdrawal, I'm going to be like, tell me about your diarrhea. What's going on? Do you have goosebumps? Are you cramping? How are you feeling mentally? Let's get you on something. You know, let's immediately go for some milky oats and skullcap. And then as I get to know more, as I get comfortable with them or make them comfortable in the environment, I want to know more about what they were taking, if there was any other like benzos or SSRIs involved, and how I can be of a service with offering Kratom. So usually in the area where my apothecary is, I'm working with, or I, you know, people are coming in the door that are street drug users, mostly heroin and methamphetamines, but also a lot of clients that are firefighters, waiters, students, bankers, construction workers who are on opiates or, you know, super high amounts of ibuprofen leading to stomach ulcers or really strong antidepressants that are like totally killing their libido, things like that. So I love to listen and also just really talk about, you know, tell me about your urination, your bowel movements, your sex life. Like, let's get to the nitty gritty and offer some solutions that can bring your nervous system back into a state of balance. And, you know, if all signs point to go and are safe, I do suggest Kratom, which is a leaf from Malaysia and Borneo and Thailand from a tree called the Mitragyna speciosa tree. And this tree has been used in that area of the world, much like coca has been used in Peru as a nutritive supplement or an energizing alternative to coffee or betel nut that can be great for long work hours, for stress, for anxiety, and mostly for pain management. So the predominant alkaloid in Kratom, which is the mitragyne named after Mitragyna speciosa, is it binds mu and kappa opioid receptors and also has other relationships that mitigate opioid withdrawal and are kind of like pain blockers. So it has a long use of just traditional relaxing use as well, like chewing on a leaf while working in the fields or going on a long, you know, a long journey and having to transport your, you know, your donkeys or your crop, you know, from here to there, and people chew on the leaves. And that's in Malaysia that I'm talking about, and also Indonesia. And so how that fits in pretty ideally into society today is that we're, you know, a lot of us are really overworked and dealing with a lot of stress, and anxiety is very common. And this plant is a savior for that. And whether you have to work a waitress or a waiter shift all night, or you are coming off of Oxycontin for a knee injury, or you're an elder who is crippled with rheumatism. I've seen really a lot of people's lives positively changed with this medicine. And again, it's not glamorous. It's not for everybody. There can be nausea and other side effects that can happen through this plant medicine. But when taken responsibly and pairing it with other really nice nervines like Kapikachu, which is known as Mucuna Puriens, or Ashwagandha, or even like a little bit of marshmallow leaf, and like Suma, which are kind of moistening tonics that can be good for constipation caused by opiates. I think that this plant medicine can be really successfully widely used by Americans and beyond. So that's just my little spiel on kratom, and I appreciate, you know, giving the time to talk about that, because I've been called out publicly and privately for talking about kratom, but I stand my ground. This plant is a savior, and I'm here to be an educator, not a shaman. I'm an educator, so that's where I stand with that medicine.
Kratom is a very relevant issue right now, especially how it's being gone after. Yeah, every other month we're having to, you know, sign petitions and work to keep it legal. Maybe what really shows the terrible humor to that is how even turmeric gets gone after. I mean, it wasn't that, I mean, hasn't turmeric actually been gone after a time or two?
Yeah, I think the curcumin extracts were, FDA was trying to ban curcumin, I believe. I think that was like a year or two ago.
Yeah, and you start thinking turmeric. Okay, this is something that people have used forever. It's one of the, you know, major spices in India. And you start thinking, and of course people use it here just plenty. And you're thinking, wait a second. I mean, what's next? Ginger? I mean, it just gets so extreme where the obviousness of the ridiculousness just becomes, it's so blatant.
Yeah, it was the Pharmacy Compounding Advisory Committee that advised the FDA to ban curcumin. And of course, okay, so let's break down that name, Pharmacy Compounding Advisory Committee. So these are the folks compounding and formulating anti-inflammatory prescription drugs. So perhaps they realize that more and more people are using turmeric, as we have this amazing access to social media and the internet and shares that we can make about helpful articles and recipes. More and more people are using these powerful plants. So I'm sure that this committee felt threatened that more and more people are using this medicine. And you know, what I really think is at the root of that is, yes, it's an anti-inflammatory, but I have read some things here and there in Chinese medicine and Ayurveda that certain doses of curcuma and like daily golden milk and detoxifying the body with high dosages of chlorophyll and curcuma can stop the mutation and regeneration of cancer cells in the body too. So cancer is the biggest industry known in the medical field, you know, cancer and heart disease in America. So I think that, yeah, plant medicines are seen as a threat to them, and they do not have our best interest in mind because it's a business. So they don't want to lose business.
Have you actually felt any reaction from the pharmaceutical industry, which I know it's vast. It's kind of like saying Hollywood, it's a vast industry, but have you had to, if you're okay, you know, mentioning it, I mean, have you had to stand your ground? I mean, have you actually had any scary moments?
Well, I've had some undercovers in my shop before, but that was mostly during that whole creepy bath salts thing, because they were completely unaware that there were medicinal herbs in the world. So they kind of came into my apothecary thinking I was a smoke shop or something like that. And yeah, they did some really interesting questioning and, you know, what's under the counter. And like, what they tried to make me to make claims, but I kind of had a red flag about them right off the bat. And I wasn't saying anything hidden. It's just the way you have to word things. Like, Go-To Cola has been known to traditionally increase cognitive capacity. You know, it's like things you have to word differently when you're dealing with FDA, rather than just being like, Go-To Cola is used for memory support. You know, there's certain things you have to word in certain ways. But I've actually had a really positive, you know, experience as an herbalist so far in that realm, and like in terms of not having to deal face to face with the FDA. So I'm pretty grateful for that. I mean, on it, on, you know, my interface with the FDA is more so seeing clients who are on prescription drugs and asking them to ask their doctors about certain herbs. So that's kind of how I weave in there, is more so being this whispering, sometimes nagging and obnoxious voice saying, ask your doctor if it's okay, or ask your doctor why you're on Xanax, ask your doctor why, you know, and that's kind of been my interface, not directly, but indirectly inspiring the truth.
Because there's so many different, you know, areas that are interesting to talk to you about. One would be right now with farming. Organic is great, but the food that we're eating, if we want to have proper food and plant medicines, it really does also start with a healthy soil. So is organic good enough? I mean, is an organic monocrop truly healthy?
Yeah, that's a huge question. You know, it's biodynamic is amazing. It's very energy intensive and intentional. And you got to be really dedicated to do biodynamic farming. And just like a human body, sometimes we need supplementation. You know, in organic farming, certain amounts of phosphorus and nitrogen are able to be supplemented in a certified organic way that are fascinating, because some of that doesn't get retained in the soil and actually washes away some nutrients in the soil, depending on the crop, depending on where it is in relationship to like a river delta, depending on the water that's being used, certain things like that. So certain organic inputs on monocropping can definitely have some negative side effects in terms of ecology and surrounding ecosystems, but it's a lot better than chemical nitrate fertilizers. You know, and it's been a little while since I've been quite deeply involved in farming practices, because I've been kind of living in an urban environment for a while. I have practiced biodynamic farming on a thyme and marjoram farm in Portugal for a summer, 2 summers ago, to learn about it. And the yields were potent. Like the thyme, they did a monograph and a profile of the thyme that they were growing, Thymus vulgaris. And it was super potent in terms of its healing capacity compared to organically or conventionally grown thyme. And the tomatoes tasted so good too. And, you know, in terms of scientific evidence, I don't know a whole lot about the capacity for us to shift into more biodynamics in America, because in reality, we have a huge population. So I don't know, you know, it's tricky. We gotta, we can't all forage, or else we would cause deforestation and disturbance. And we can't really all go biodynamic because of how long it takes and the energy inputs, but we can do less monocropping and more intentional, conscious cultivation of major crops. I do. What that looks like, I really couldn't tell you at this point.
Right now, organic monocrops are a step in the right direction, but it doesn't seem like that's where we're eventually going to end up if we continue doing better. Maybe eventually we'll just see farming as a more mystical practice and see our little, and see our crops as little persons, and it'll all work out somehow or the other. You know,
yeah, and I'll start composting. That is so critical. Getting mass out of the landfill and back into our earth to create nutrients is a great place, no matter whether you're biodynamic or organic or an elf. It doesn't matter. We gotta all compost as a society, for sure. And communal, like urban composting, would be amazing too. Better programs for recycling, better programs for waste management and composting in urban environments is a great step in the right direction.
For some people, it's just definitely not something they can do, but it seems like if at all possible, if you have a little bit of land there in your backyard, grow something. Try to do it organically, but get out there and actually, you know, experience growing little persons, growing plants, and eat them and use them, and compost your land and keep it happy. Or maybe just a big herb box in your window. I really hope that people never feel defeated and at least do a little something, because that is really all some people can do.
Yeah.
What is your biggest passion this moment in the plant world? in plant medicine, and how can people get a hold of you?
Ooh, at the moment, because I'm here with this family. So at the moment, I'm actually really interested in lactation education and helping to educate mamas and papas to be about the importance of healthy body, healthy milk, healthy baby. America is actually really low on the breastfeeding awareness and success spectrum. The UK is kind of struggling as well with this vital and ancient practice. But yeah, every day mamas produce the exact elixir for their baby that baby needs that day for their growth, the right antibodies, the right proteins, the right profiles for exactly where that baby is in their growth and their development. And I think, breastfeeding awareness is like totally this new interest of mine. I've been studying a little bit of midwifery, mostly just like more casual doula work for a while, which is funny because 10 years ago, I was kind of the like overpopulation sucks, kind of like punk social butterfly surfer chick who like never thought she'd have kids. And for the last 6 years, I've also been teaching about natural contraceptives. And in a lot of different places, I've taught this class called Why Is Woman Womb Botanicals, which was all about cycle tracking, amenagogues, regulating menses, hosting red tents. And I still teach that, but I'm also wanting to expand the spectrum of what I know about women's herbalism and family planning with herbal medicine and just kind of elongating what it is to be a human and a woman in this world and all the plants that are here to help us in that realm too. So, for example, last night I made lactation cookies with moringa, pumpkin seed, banana, and flax seeds, and then I'm brewing up a tea for the mama right now of fennel, fenugreek, a little bit of marshmallow leaf, and nettle and red raspberry, and just, you know, helping her to produce for her twins she just gave birth to. And I think if, you know, children are born more naturally these days and are fed at the breast longer these days, I think that that would really have a positive effect on America, our connection to our identity, our healthy and positive relationship capacity, and also how connected we are to the earth. So I don't know who manufactures formula, but it's manufactured. That's that. Whereas, you know, breast milk is straight nourishment from source into baby. And so that's just a kind of recent passion of mine, just because I'm in that world right now. But also continuously passionate for helping people transition from alcohol to nervines, and just moving from this like me, I narcissism to this we consciousness and for the plants, for the earth.
Your surrounding nature, the environment you live in, is actually providing what you need. And that's why it's good to get out there and gather, because nature's trying to give it to you.
Yes. And two, you know, when in doubt about, you know, anything, I don't know. I guess like some people ask me like, what makes you happy or what do you do when you're feeling down or feeling defeated because there's a lot of negativity in the world? Or what are you doing when people doubt or ask you if herbal medicine is even real or effective? I just tell them, well, I guess like no one is as bold or as certain in what they're saying as those who know that they're loved. So love yourself, massage your feet, lather yourself in creosote oil, look into the mirror, tell yourself I'm capable, I'm whole, I'm beautiful. And then if you have a mission, that makes anything possible. That self-love, that strong foundation. So just a little cheesy motivation for you, but coming straight from, you know, just me and my own practice, because it is easy to get down on yourself and doubt your capacity to educate and transform other people's lives. So if anybody has questions about anything I've said, comments, controversy, whatever, I'm open to hear it. Go by the name of Chloe B, and I have a website, www.rbbotanicals.com, or plantlove@rbbotanicals.com is my email. I've got a sweet Instagram at Rainbow Bliss Botanicals, and a website that you can, there's a blog on there that's free, full of all sorts of posts from lucid dream plants to anxiolytics to making your own cough syrup, stuff like that. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. That was really amazing. That last message about, you know, people covering themselves in creosote oil and loving themselves, that might be the core to it all, because I know it is amazing how many people are down on themselves. Maybe that is the first medicine that so many people need right now.
Yes, self-love is so super powerful.
Yeah.
An entrepreneur like you, and when you are driven being, it's only natural for us to like get fatigued. Like, it happens. So what kind of practices are going to help you stay in balance? And creosote oil is the answer, man.